Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Thanks for listening. After a 16-year waiting period, there was a good amount of buzz this summer about the return of Hyperstatic. And rightly so. This old-school three-piece indie punk band brings everything you could want to the table and more. Sonically, they connect with everything from King Crimson to Sonic Youth. And with Sammy McKee on drums, Mike Fair on bass, and Brian Hoffman on guitar and vocals, they have the talent to bring it all together. The release of their four-song EP, Witness, reminds us of why this music just sounds so good. This interview was particularly extra special for me because I got to spend time with a friend that I haven't seen in a long time.
Hi, my name is Brian Hoffman. I'm a member of the band Hyperstatic, which is why I'm here.
It's really good to see you again.
Yeah, I can't believe
our paths have crossed in this way.
I know.
You and I have known each other, I think, since second grade.
Yeah, that's right.
Unbelievable.
All the way back.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, going over to your house and learning how to play Rush riffs and Led Zeppelin riffs on our guitars.
Right.
You taught me how to play the crunch.
Yeah, that's a classic one. I do like that.
Yeah.
Sabbath, I mean, just whatever is on the radio at the time, just...
And I also loved going to your house because you had the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy computer game.
That's right. Yes.
I love that game.
All text-based.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had to type, go into room.
And I could never get the damn fish in my ear.
I know. There were some parts of that that just were maddening,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd forgotten all about that.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Yourself?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you again, like I said. So Hyperstatic, this is the first music you guys have put out in 16 years.
Pretty much, and even the one that we did back then wasn't really an official studio release. It was just kind of a stuff we'd done, you know, in the practice space.
Mm-hmm.
Four-track recordings and, you know, all the staples of indie rockdom, other than being in the studio. So this is different in that respect and a lot more real feeling. So I would even call this maybe our first real release.
Wow.
Ever. But yeah, it's just one of those things where stuff gets in the way and hiatuses and all sorts of life things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We finally decided, went to see Superchunk last year up in Columbus, and, you know, that was kind of a touchstone for Mike, Sammy, and I. And that kind of brought us back together, and we're like, you know, why are we messing around?
We got to do this.
Yeah, we got to do this. We got the songs. We got the will. So let's just make it happen.
So tell me about the band. You have Sammy McKee and Mike Fair. How long have you guys known each other? I guess 16 years now.
Well, Sammy and I actually met him on a message board back in the, you know, mid days of the internet.
You're dating yourself so bad.
I know. So went from Beatles to metal, you know, as you know, and eventually got into punk rock, and thanks to you, you know, like Minutemen, and I can remember being in your car and hearing Minutemen for the first time. And,
well, that's funny, because I was thinking, I remember being in your car,
yeah,
and hearing bands like They Might Be Giants for
the first
time, and Throwing Muses.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah. The
when it kind of went from there, I mean, I think a lot of people were in the same boat, you know, you start out with... The Beatles were just so pure and magical, and something about them struck me when I was in my early teens, and then eventually something like metal comes along, and I go, wow, that's kind of cool. There's like wizards and demons and all kinds of awesome imagery, and
sure.
It sounds pretty cool, and I've got a guitar, and let me turn on the distortion, and hey, this isn't super hard to play some of it.
And fairies wear boots.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So eventually into indie rock, so, you know, Throwing Muses and into like Teen Beat Records was the message board that I met Sammy on. Unrest, if you've ever heard of them, or Tuscadero. They were pretty big out of the DC area. But a lot of the indie labels, Amphetamine Reptile and all that kind of stuff. And so I saw Sammy was playing the Southgate House, and I thought he was like a touring act. So, you know, I show up and I'm all excited. It turns out it's open mic, which is fine. I mean, that was cool too. I didn't know they did open mic, so we did a few open mic shows there. But yeah, talking to him, I mean, it was like totally on the same wavelength, just musically. And he played a lot of guitar. He's been in bands for years and years, and was in a band called Charleston Entry that was semi-big in the early 90s in this area. And so we just kind of got together and started playing as a two-piece, which was fun for me because I'd never really, I mean, I'd played a couple parties and stuff, but I never really played out. So to me, this felt like, wow, I'm really finally doing something. You know, I had the four track for years, the Tascam 424 of Legend.
Yeah.
And plenty of songs just sitting, you know, on cassettes in my room. And finally, I got a chance to go out and do something. Playing as a two-piece is nice from scheduling standpoint because you don't have to get too many people together like Chicago or the Doobie Brothers. You know, I'm sure those guys probably really go through a lot of rigmarole to get together in one room.
Yeah.
So as a two-piece, it's like, hey, this is great, you know.
But so eventually, at this point, you're playing guitar and Sammy's playing drums?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he had drums and he had done some drum stuff on the side, but I don't think he'd really done anything serious with drums, so it was a good chance for him to explore that arena. So we played, you know, Top Cats, a lot of Southgate house shows, but I'd always wanted a bass player because it takes a little bit of the pressure off, you know, being a two-piece. I mean, you make any sort of mistake, it's pretty much
it's on you.
Very obvious.
Yeah.
And plus, just a lot of the dynamics that you get. I mean, you think of the Jam or Rush, you know, and a lot of the great three pieces were just that chemistry, and there's something so very liberating about that kind of a setup. So Sammy, I believe, knew Mike. I think that's how, I mean, he knew Mike from back in his days of, he was been in a lot of bands in the area, a lot of punk rock and that sort of thing. So he brought Mike in, and I mean, it was just supernatural fit. Mike just, it's just amazing. I bring something out and I wouldn't even know what to play with it. I mean, I've tried to play some bass over my own songs, you know, just on recordings, and it's fairly simplistic. I don't think guitarists make the best bass players oftentimes because it's a totally different mindset.
I can attest to that, sure.
Yeah. It is something you really kind of have to dedicate yourself to.
Yeah. It is a totally different mindset. You go from playing more forward to kind of being in the back of your head and playing in a more rhythmic way.
Oh,
in a lot of ways, at least.
Absolutely. I mean, and I watch Sam and Mike, and I mean, you really do get that sense. I'd always heard it, but until I played with them, you really feel them locked in together, and I'm just kind of the person on the side doing whatever I do, and I could drop out and it wouldn't even matter. Those guys could just keep going. So yeah, once Mike came into the fold, I mean, it was just really natural, really felt right, and we started to really expand what we were doing, and bringing in new ideas is always a lot of fun, because before that we'd kind of been relying on the older material, so then I started bringing some new stuff, and Mike took it, you know, to the next level and pushed us. So that's kind of how Mike came in. So that was probably maybe mid-2000s.
And where does the band Viewfinder fit in this history?
So during that same time, yeah, we had Viewfinder, which featured Greg Wilson and Joe Sewer, who were in Ready Made together. I think they were both in Ready Made.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we got Jeff Orlando, who has since moved back home. But yeah, that was kind of Sammy's front band, and I was the side guitarist, which was nice because, you know, not as much pressure on me. I just kind of like, I don't know, they're your songs, you know, I just play them and I'll do whatever. So it was kind of a nice to have both aspects of it. You know, you had the side Hyperstatic where I was the principal songwriter and we would just kind of mess around with the ideas when we got together. And then for Viewfinders, the opposite, Sammy would come in with the main ideas and then we would kind of come in and re-explore them, and sometimes it would be exactly the same as what he envisioned, and other times it would go in completely different directions. And I mean, Joe and Greg and Jeff all really, they're top-notch guys who had a lot of great ideas and a lot of rhythmic enthusiasm to bring to the table, a great pedigree of music.
Yeah, I think if you drew a family tree of local music here in town, at least from, like, let's say 1990 to the present, Joe Sewer has to be somewhere in the dead center.
Yeah, it's like looking at a prog rock map, you know.
Yeah.
There's certain people that are just like, everything kind of comes from them. So yeah, absolutely. And actually, it was kind of funny because when I first got on Facebook and friended you, it's like you were friends with all the same people. I was like, how did this happen?
Right.
You know, we don't talk to each other for years, and then all of a sudden, we're friended with the same people. I mean, it was just this weird, I think it's a function of the area that we're in.
Right.
But also just of how important certain people are to the scene.
Well, and also you went to UK for college. I stayed up here in Cincinnati.
Right.
So we, you know, kind of separated for several years, and then you came back, and at some point we ended up both living on this side of the river.
Yeah, kind of funny how that works. Is
yeah.
Sometimes things move in weird ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't have anything against Kentucky. It was just more work related. You know, a lot of the jobs were over here. But yeah. So yeah, we were all connected with the same people in this scene, and I think that's we do have a strong music scene, and I'm proud to just be a small part of it, you know, and play with these guys that are just incredible. And Sammy too is one who he's played with a multitude of people. He's in Old City too now with Dave Cupp.
Dave's another one of those folks that just seems to be connected.
He is,
in a very integral way
right.
to the whole machinery of local music.
Yeah, absolutely. And now the clubs that we have here have really brought a lot of people together. I mean, with Motor and the Southgate being gone was kind of a big loss, even since it's moved, and it's still the Southgate sort of. But I mean, that was kind of a big draw for a lot of us, probably you included, I'm guessing.
Playing the ballroom was a special experience. Not
gonna
lie.
Yeah, when I stepped in that stage the first time, it was just like, I cannot believe it. I mean, I've seen some of the Stereo Lab and Yellow Tango and Malkmus, you know, some of the greats have stood on the same stage. And
I saw They Might Be Giants play there
that's
once.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
I think I saw a guy kind of that looked like you there.
Mine
sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah. So this album, it's EP. It's a four-song EP. It's called Witness. I was just reading a write-up from Mike Breen from City Beat, and his words were, if you're a fan of the fuzzy, highly melodic sounds of iconic bands like Guided by Voices, Superchunk, Sebadoh, and Beulah, Uptown Underground is right in your wheelhouse. I think that totally nails it.
Yeah.
Mike just, he's a wonderful writer. He's a wonderful explorer of local music, big supporter of local music. Listening to these songs, I can pick out, maybe because of the long time that I've known you, but I can pick out influences here and there. I can even hear a Rush influence here or a Firehose influence there. It's pretty strong stuff, and I'm really, really pleased to be able to listen to this. I want to take a second, step aside, and play a song from Witness, the new EP. I want to play the song called The Disconnected, and the reason I want to play this is, plain and simple, it has the best guitar tone I have heard in so long.
Yes, your nerddom is coming out. Anybody that would pay attention to that,
that's me.
You know.
This is The Disconnected from Hyperstatic from their EP, Witness. We'll be right back. So talking about that guitar tone that I love so much, Mike Montgomery recorded this EP.
Yeah.
Tell me about that experience of recording at Candyland.
It was fabulous. I mean, I love the locale. I mean, just Dayton, it's weird to have something like that in a place like that. You just wouldn't expect it. And I know that he moved at some point. I didn't get to see the old studio. But I think it's a perfect location, and just walking through those doors, and you can tell that it's a bit of a work in progress, but I mean, he's got a huge vision, and he's got some amazing equipment. And I mean, being where the Breeders were, and you can see it on the wall, he's got the tape from the board, yeah. Masking tape with the different people's faders, locations, and just a lot of just emotion being in that room, and among the people, or the ghosts of the people that were a big influence on me.
One thing I think is so cool, though, particularly about Mike, is that you could be Kelly Deal, or you could be Brian Hoffman.
Yeah,
and he treats you exactly the same.
Oh yeah, I would imagine I could see that with him. He's very, and that's one of the things we really liked about him, was he's very upfront, doesn't blow any smoke of any kind anywhere. Yeah. Just will really tell you how it is, and if he doesn't think something's working, he'll let you know. And some great suggestions and real care for the art. Just setting up the drums, I mean, took forever. So I mean, that tells you a lot, mm-hmm. that he knows what he's doing and he knows what will work and what won't work. And we, not having a ton of experience, I mean, Sammy and Mike have both recorded before, but he knew where in the weeds to go and where we didn't need to go. And so, and just the tone that you talk about, I mean, part of that was he had an amp. He had me go to two different amps. So I had my amp and then a Supersonic 22 that he had. And I think part of it, one of them was clean and one wasn't. So just something like that, simple, that I wouldn't have thought to do, added a lot to the recording and how things turned out. And being able to play with those tracks, once you have the luxury of multiple tracks to do things with, and the wonders of new studio tools where you can copy and paste and all of that as well. And just watching him, I mean, it's just, I know my way around computers, but I felt like I was in another world just sitting in that couch watching him do his thing. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's just a wizard.
From beginning to end, from the minute you walked into Candyland to the time that you had your final release, how much did these songs change?
Yeah, that's something I wasn't expecting, because we had been living with these for a while. It wasn't super new material. It was probably at least maybe 3 years old, the newest song. We'd been playing it live for quite some time, some of them. But still, you really, it's like anything else. When you have a chance to think about something extensively, and you will, because you kind of have to. You have to approach it from a different angle than you would when you're playing live or even at a practice. So there weren't drastic changes, but like on Uptown Underground in particular, there's some guitar stuff going on in the background, that there's extra parts that we laid down that changed the flow of certain passages a little bit, and really added to kind of the weight and the oomph of the track, if you will. Being able to do that, like the Disconnected didn't change a whole lot, but I think probably Uptown Underground was the one where we really kind of played around a little bit. And then the other thing was, I mean, it was kind of fun. You're sitting there, and both Mike and Sam on two separate songs both said, "Hold on, I've got an idea." And they both of them actually added guitar parts to the ends of songs that were never anywhere envisioned prior to going into the studio. That was a lot of fun. It was mostly guitar. We did a little bit with percussion. I think Mike added some tambourine to one of them. But yeah, when you're sitting there listening to those tracks, sometimes you'll hear things in your head that weren't there before. And that happened on probably at least three of the four tracks, where somebody had an idea and all the ideas worked. It was just pretty amazing.
It's interesting, because sometimes when you get in the studio, like, you think this is your chance to get all this stuff down. So let's play, let's explore, let's experiment. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you know, this, like I said, this is your one opportunity to kind of capture your vision.
Right.
And so, yeah, have somebody go out and do a different guitar port or play a tambourine or hit a tin can or kick a chicken, whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, and there's no tape now, so
right.
Who cares? It doesn't cost anything. Just add another track.
Sure. And how long were you actually in the studio? How many days did you record?
I believe it was like 2 days of recording. It all kinds of blends together because we did recording and mixing. I think we were there on probably 4 separate occasions, and then we had to do the mastering as well. But I think it was just probably 2.5 days of recording, maybe. It took a lot longer than we thought it would, just because, you know, some things you can fix and some things you can't fix. So drums especially, you can't really go back and redo drums. You kind of have to get that right the first time for the most part, depending on what it is. One of the songs we even scrapped, we were going to do 5. And
A major decision.
It was, but it was okay. I mean, 4 is really enough for an EP. 5 would have been kind of gravy. Mm. And we're going to put out a full length anyway, hopefully next year. So that's one more song that we can throw on there. We tried a few times to get it going and just couldn't pull it together. Just weren't feeling it. And so we just decided to focus on the other 4.
And it was mastered by Anna Bentley at QCA?
It was, correct, yeah.
How was that experience?
Sammy actually took care of that. So okay. She emailed back and forth with us. And so from my perspective, as far as listening to him and getting feedback from her, I mean, it worked great. But I never actually even got to meet her, unfortunately. When we did our Viewfinder LP, I went and helped with the mastering of that, which is also a QCA. And our practice space actually used to be a QCA. So we keep coming back to that place. If you go and find an old City Beat, you'll see a picture of us on the pallets out back.
Well, and again, it has the ghosts of people past.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you walk through there and you see the CDs and the artwork. And I mean, every time I walked in there, it was people I'd never heard of. And then you'd see like Bootsy Collins or something.
Right.
Like, wow.
So tell me about this potential full album release. What kind of time frame are we looking at?
I don't even know. We haven't really discussed it at all other than
yeah, we're gonna do
that's
this.
That's right.
It took us 16 years to do 4 songs.
Yeah, we're on a roll now. Let's do a double LP. So yeah, I mean, we've got the songs. We've been playing them live for a while and living with them. It's just a matter of picking them and finding some time and hoping that other stuff doesn't get in the way, you know, one of Sammy's 12 other bands or something else. But I mean, we're pretty determined and we're all fairly easygoing. I mean, we're not the types to get upset about this, that, or the other. So, I mean, going in the studio is not a life-sucking experience. So I look forward to, you know, heading back in and knocking that out.
Are there going to be some more live shows?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got one next month, and I should have written the date down, but it's at Motor. If you look at their calendar, you'll see Hyperstatic, and actually Porcupine, who's Greg Norton of Husker Du fame, he's playing bass in this band.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I didn't even know he was still, I thought he was doing the restaurant thing. I guess he's back in a band now, so highly recommend that one. I've always wanted to see him live, because I've seen Grant and Bob, but never got to see Greg, so it'd be like I've seen Husker Du now, almost. Just like, in tiny little bites.
It's like me seeing Simon and Garfunkel.
It's kind of the same thing, right?
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, put them together in your head.
That's right.
It's fine.
Well, let's talk just a little bit about some of these. I hate to use the word influences, but it's the word that's coming to my brain.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds that you've grown up with. Futility Exercise
right,
is
yes.
an instrumental. And then that one combined with Uptown Underground has a, to me, distinctly Sonic Youth kind of sound. Mm. How big is that Sonic Youth sound to you guys?
Well, I'll tell you, there are certain moments in your life musically where it's just like you can remember everything about it. And I can remember everything about watching 120 Minutes in my basement and seeing Teenage Riot just like it was yesterday. I mean, that was one of those, that and Bad Brains was the other one. But yeah, Teenage Riot, just like a bombshell went off in my world. And I went out to Wizards the next day and got the cassette, which I still have at home. And so, yes, they loomed large over all of us, really. I mean, we're all pretty heavy Sonic Youth aficionados, especially Lee Ranaldo. We kind of have a soft spot for his songs.
He's an artist in the truest form of the word.
He is, yeah. And still, I mean, he's pushing boundaries and doing new things. And Kim, too. I mean, yeah. And all of them, really. If you look at their projects, they all choose them very well, and they don't settle. I can remember there used to be a show on PBS called Sessions at West 54th Street. Do you remember that? It was hosted by David Byrne for a while.
No.
And John Hyatt. And
I should check it out, though, apparently.
Yeah, it's hard to find, but they had an eclectic group of artists like, you know, Elvis Costello and Beck, and then you'd see Emma Lou Harris, I think, or somebody like that. But Sonic Youth was on there, and it was around the time A Thousand Leaves came out, so I was all excited to watch it. They played four songs, all instrumental versions of what would show up on A Thousand Leaves, and it just blew me away. It's like I was expecting to hear stuff I knew and vocals, and no, yeah, they just went out there, and a lot of it sounded almost improv. So yeah, they were definitely a huge influence. There's a little shoegaze in there as well. Obviously with the tremolo and the jazz master, it's hard to
can't avoid
it's hard
that.
Not to draw that
right.
That influence. Prog rock is really big for all of us, King Crimson in particular. Yes. So in something like Futility Exercise, you can probably hear we play around a lot with time signatures.
Yes. Yeah, I did notice that distinctly, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know a lot of the times. I wish I did. I feel dumb for not knowing, you know, what my own time signatures even are, but I can kind of count them out.
Yeah.
And they feel right in my head, and Sammy fortunately can pick up on them pretty well. But there have been times where, you know, we'll have to go back and forth, and I'm like, no, there's not an and at the end of that one, you know. It's 1 and 2 and 3, 1 and 2 and 3. And so, yeah, we've gone down, you know, some roads of pain, and but eventually we come out the other side. But yeah, there's a lot of prog rock, a lot of indie rock, especially Sonic Youth, punk rock.
Well, not huge in listening to the song Crash, your vocals specifically, I'm getting a very strong Ed from Ohio kind of vibe.
That's funny. Yeah, I was just talking about when I don't know if you were there or not, but that fire hose show that was in the Shorty's Underground, remember on Short Vine?
I broke a rib at that show.
Okay, I thought you were there. Yeah, that was, yeah. So yeah, fire hose, stemming from the whole Minutemen thing, I mean, they were big too, and yes, Ed from Ohio is a real neat character in and of himself, just the way he came to be in the band and his aesthetic. There's a very genuine aspect to him, and he just seemed very earnest and not really punk rock. He was just kind of seemed like a guy that could be a busker out on the street corner just singing his heart out, and he just happened to end up with these two incredible players. He's an incredible player himself. But yeah, he was interesting where he fit into Firehose, and I'm glad they were able to make a career out of that and keep it going for a while and even get on a major label, because they really had it going on. But yes, Firehose was definitely very big for me. I mean, I had a poster on my wall of them.
Well, just to bring it all full circle, when I went to visit Mike Montgomery at Candyland, I walk into his office and there's a package on the floor addressed to Ed Crawford.
Really?
And I was like, oh, look at that.
Yeah. Wow. So he's in this area, or he was just...
He is in the Pittsburgh area, I want to say. Working. Jerry Durr from Frey Tree Records recorded an album with him from a band called Food.
Okay. I remember he's in like Customized or some other band, but I didn't remember. Okay. I had heard of Food. Wow.
So he's still doing it,
that's
I think.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad he's still out there.
So it's time for you to pick one of the songs from Witness that we're going to play as we leave. Which one would you like to listen to?
I mean, Uptown Underground is probably my favorite of that set, just because it just really kind of came together, and it features all of us pretty prominently and uniquely. It's just a really neat mix of, you know, heavy and light and melodic and rhythmic. So I would probably pick that one if I had to pick one.
All right. Well, this is the song Uptown Underground by Hyperstatic from their EP Witness. Brian, I can't tell you how happy I am to be able to sit here with you in the studio and just hang out and have a conversation.
Likewise.
This has been great.
I could do this every week.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
My most sincere thanks to Brian Hoffman from Hyperstatic for stopping by and spending some time with me. Hyperstatic's four-song EP, Witness, is available online, and they'll also be playing a live show at Motor Pub on October 13th with Porcupine and Knife the Symphony. For more information about both the EP and the live show, you can find links at our website, wvxu.org/lx. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. This episode was recorded and produced by me, Jim Nolan. The theme music for this episode is by Scott Holmes and comes from the Free Music Archive. Find out more at freemusicarchive.com. Until next time.